This is very drafty in here.
It's Halloween.
That's you fingering your entrails. They're crispy.
Or it's a bowl of candy.
Could be that.
Welcome to Comedy Film Nerds Podcast. It's Halloween, everybody.
Episode 393.
Oh, halfway my God. Halfway to 786, yep. Everybody.
393, nice. A numerical palindrome.
Wow. I'm going to go.
Yeah.
I'm outgunned here.
If he would have said that, I wouldn't have shown up. He didn't. When I called him in the car saying, hey, I'm running late, he didn't say I'm going to start the show with a numerical palindrome.
It's not fair. It's not fair. Yeah. You can't
blindside
a guy. I'm out of my league, clearly, so...
Throw out numerical palindrome like it's like nothing happened.
Yeah. We're going to let that sit.
We're just going to pretend that didn't.
Yeah.
We're just saying that. Yeah. Like, hi, how are you?
Yeah. Let's I'm going to put a blanket over that and pretend it's not there.
Yeah. Just let it cook.
Yeah.
But we are getting ready for Halloween in this house. The kids got their costumes ready and brought a giant bowl of candy. So you guys get first crack before the Rugrats all get them tonight.
Nice.
Thank you.
I'm just going to put my feet in them and nod off. What are your kids going
Candy as? Coma. My daughter is going with her friend down the street. They're going as Thing 1 and Thing 2.
Nice.
And my son has found this weird costume online he really wanted where he's in a cloak. He's an alien, but he's holding a cage with an alien inside where he operates like a puppet. So it's a very elaborate costume.
I like that.
Yeah.
I want to see that. Yeah.
It was the second choice. The first choice was a dinosaur eating a donut, but that was sold out. So
he went with some mystical alien, multidimensional alien?
He's got a lot of layers.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. He was wide and varied interests,
I
for sure.
I was Batman like 5 years in a row when I was a kid. I wasn't thinking about metaphysical
No. Unless Ben Cooper had pressed it out of their factory, it wasn't going on me.
Oh, I remember, when we were kids, literally every costume was a smock. And a plastic mask.
Yeah. Oh, terrible. Yeah. Ben Cooper costumes, and it's insulting.
Yeah.
Like when you think back on what you had and what there is now, where you can get like a kid can get like a full Spider-Man costume looks like Spider-Man
or Thor,
with the hammer and everything, and hard plastic, and that. I mean, I go back and I look at some of those pictures, and I remember that my favorite one was always. And I think it was even a hand-me-down from somebody else, but it was the hobo, which
classic.
Today we call them the homeless, but back then they were a hobo. And what was great about it is it was the classic thing. It was the smock with a picture of a hobo on it, because that's what hobos wear, pictures of themselves. You know, they're big fans of themselves.
Right. Saying, I'm a hobo.
I'm a hobo. Yeah. In case you were wondering, hobo here.
And it was a plastic cigar, right?
And it was a plastic cigar, but it was also it was the plastic mask. But this was like a kind of a deluxe costume because it had a red light in the nose because he's a drunk.
Oh. Ah.
See? So it lit up red.
Good for you.
Yeah.
I'm a young rummy.
And I would do. I would go from house to house and try to, get like a little something to take the edge off instead of the candy. Come on.
You just hold out a cup and be like,
Come on. I know you got some brandy in here.
Yeah.
You're not going through this night sober. I know that.
Airplane bottles. I know you guys have them. Just pass them out into the bags.
Look, I'm 11. I have way more stress than you right now.
So, ladies and gentlemen, that is the dulcet sound of our guest today. And he is a writer for Comedy Film Nerds, a comedian. And we love having him here. And we try to get him here every October-ish. Ladies and gentlemen, Matt Weinhold.
Hey! Hi, everybody.
You're wearing your Monster Party shirt, which is a fun
I
podcast.
Like to represent. You guys have been on it. And, those were good times.
Those were really fun episodes. What I love, too, is it's a you literally live up to the name where it's a party. You don't just show up and record an episode. Oh, no.
It is a commitment.
We hang out. We have dinner. We chit-chat. And then we actually record.
Yeah. There are drinks. Mm-hmm. It goes for a while.
Yes.
Until everyone's a little lubricated.
Mm-hmm.
And, look, it's an excuse to have what I like to think of it as my weekly little mini Comic-Con.
Right.
You know?
What a great way to think about it. And, and you set it up accordingly.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I was like, well, I was good. I love it because for me, I guess it was a mini Comic-Con with really good Thai food. I remember we had.
Right.
Oh, yeah. No, we set a table.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was the most.
And they ordered enough food for like 20 people.
Yeah. It was like the most elaborate podcast I think I've ever, in terms of like welcoming, you know, like this show. You're lucky to get a goddamn bottle of water. Only
I see giant bowl of candy.
I know. Today's special.
Once a
year.
You don't have this bowl of candy.
It's not like for tomorrow's. There's going to be no like lady fingers or.
There might be some of this next week if nobody.
Right.
You know.
Of course. Right.
There might be some leftovers for sure.
I would love it if we had scones or something like that to offer people.
Oh, that's a great idea. We should make scones.
We should have. I got to tell you, when I did tea with Alice, we talked about it because we had her on the show for the Blade Runner spoiler rep. She had snacks and really good. So she's Australian, so she knows tea. And we had really good tea and snacks. And I was like, this, I'm more podcasts need to do this. Because I'm asked to be a guest on a lot of podcasts. Mm. And, you know, you gotta fucking ramp it up. You want me to drive to hell and back?
Sure,
you
right.
Better,
We had a panel at LA Podfest this year specifically for guest etiquette. And it was
a brilliant idea.
It was Jackie Cation's idea because of that very reason. She said, look, when you invite someone to be on your podcast, you're asking them to give up their time. And, you know, it's a commitment to actually do that. So you need to treat them a certain way.
Yeah.
You need to be ready. You need to be on time. You have to offer refreshments. And all those things were like really great points. And people were saying it was a really good panel because it's things that new podcasters don't think about. Like,
great idea. And it's like, especially in the early years when we were trying to get our thing off the ground, you know, there's a lot of, you're still working through getting the equipment to work and figuring everything out. But
we don't know what you're talking about.
We never had any of those problems. You know.
Yeah.
But as we're here back in the garage because everyone at ATC is hung over from the festival. Yeah. Aaron got lost in the desert with the ATC mystery machine. That's why we couldn't record.
Yeah, I doubt that stuff's even hooked up by now yet.
Although I like this. This is, you know, this is homey. It feels real.
Yeah.
You know? And there's not a lot of, there's no gloss. This will be like down and dirty, gritty.
There is definitely no gloss. Here.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's t-shirts and candy.
Yeah.
And office supplies.
I smell just a hint of water damage, which usually kind of gets me going, you know.
Well, let's talk about some movies.
Let's talk some movies.
Let's start with Cult.
We should say this real quick.
Yes.
Had a blast at the ATC Festival.
Oh, fantastic.
Anybody that came out.
Really fun.
It was really fun. The shows you and I did Thursday night, and then I did Friday, and Saturday. The festival was a blast. I had a great time with it. So, need to say that.
So, yeah, it was a really fun time, and it was really well put together, too. I know they didn't have a lot of lead time to put it together, but it really went smoothly. So it was really fun.
All right, let's talk about this first movie.
Yeah, Cult of Chucky.
You guys talk about that. I'm going to have a snack.
Yeah.
And you know what? I'm so proud of you. You picked the one that I would have picked. The $100,000 bar.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now
so
shortened
good.
Up to 100 grand.
Yeah, because it's just too many words in candy.
They couldn't fit it on the wrapper anymore.
Not on the mini ones.
Yeah.
That's what I hate about candy, too much reading.
Yeah. So now, Cult of Chucky, this is a movie that I was very surprised that existed because there have been so many of these movies. All the way back to 29 years ago, Child's Play came out.
That's right.
And it's still the same people involved that have done the original movies. Like Don Mancini has wrote every single one of them, no relation. And but what I find fascinating is that...
That you're aware of.
Yes, that I'm aware of, indeed. This is like... His Mad Max. You know, it's like when George Miller returns to the franchise many years later. And, hey, some people have Mad Max, some people have Chucky. It's still, it's still, you know, it's still impressive to actually be able to, yes, that you know, especially like a horror franchise that it just keeps going. Now, and this latest movie, I haven't seen all the Chucky movies. You have, so we'll get into that.
Oh,
in a second.
Oh yes, I have.
But this really was an exercise in low budget horror filmmaking. It was like it hit all the right beats. It had 90% one location, no recognizable stars, with the exception of the doll. So,
Well, you're coming to the thing anyway, right?
Yeah, you don't need to see a cameo from like Dolph Lundgren or somebody. But, you don't need.
And for horror fans, you do get a cameo.
For horror fans, you get a cameo.
Yeah.
And but it's like an Easter egg.
Did Jigsaw have any big names?
No. I mean, if anything, what happens with these horror franchises is, someone who is lesser known actually gets elevated by this specific franchise.
Sure, yeah.
So, and, you know, Brad Dourif, who's done the voice of Chucky, he's been in, you know, he's got an IMDb page longer than your arm. He's been in a million things forever.
I love
forever.
Him in everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And, everybody, I guess most people were introduced to him with One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Right. And yeah. And there's an Easter egg in the movie where he's like, because it takes place in an asylum,
mm-hmm.
and he goes, God, it's like Cuckoo's Nest around here.
I mean, I love this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And did you see Curse of Chucky?
I didn't see Curse of Chucky.
Because you kind of have to a little bit to, I mean, I guess you can skim the IMDb or whatever.
I was definitely aware as I was watching this movie, I'm like, oh, this is referencing other movies I haven't seen.
Yeah, because... What was great, what I love about the Chucky movies, first of all, you've got the first one, Child's Play, directed mm-hmm. by Tom Holland, one of my favorite directors. We've had him on our show. And you've, from that point on, I mean, that movie is a fun, great, scary little film with some great performances. Chris Sarandon and... I'm trying to remember the name of the woman, but
Catherine Hicks.
Thank you. And
this is pre CG too.
Oh yeah,
this is all practical doll effects,
and it works. And the
practical doll effects.
Yeah, that's what I want. I want more of that.
Mm-hmm.
And they just kept making these movies. Mm-hmm. And Alex Vincent, who is the kid in the first Child's Play movie, comes back. And what I love about the whole franchise is that they explored every different version that they could of with Chucky.
We'll talk about this a little later as I went to Halloween Horror Nights at Universal over the weekend, and one of the themes, because this is a Universal property, was promoting Chucky. Like when you're on the tram ride, you know the you know how you have the screen where the tram operator
sure.
talks to you?
Uh-huh.
Chucky took that over and said he was pretty much going to drive the tram off the cliff unless we promoted his movie.
Oh,
that's funny.
Yeah,
like that.
So
you should employ some type of marketing strategy like that. Threatening people on a tram. We've never done it.
Yeah. So, and this movie.
I just want to see our numbers move. That's
right.
All I'm looking for. I don't really care the numbers. Like how.
Yeah, no
Maybe
publicity.
Make it more intimate. Just a Jeep.
No
you know?
No publicity is bad publicity.
Golf cart. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
So, Chucky also mentions one of the trivias that one of the other dolls sounds like Hannibal Lecter, and then they can't believe they canceled that show.
That's great.
Turns out Don Mancini wrote two episodes for Hannibal.
Oh.
That's why. So, and this was my favorite piece of trivia. This is the filmmakers going after the internet trolls. 2 weeks before the film was officially released, several Twitter and YouTube users started to leak scenes and sometimes even the full-length film on said platforms. Don Mancini claimed on his Twitter that all users who leak something, referring to Cult of Chucky, being screen chapters, videos, or even spoilers, have been identified and legal action would be taken against them. He wrote, "To the geniuses who leaked Cult of Chucky and tweeted about it, congrats. Not only are you terrible people, but now Universal lawyers know who you are." Alex Vincent even stated that he didn't even find the logic in what the users were doing, stating that the movie would be free to watch on Netflix anyway.
Wow.
So, but it just shows to show you can't stop a troll. I mean, they're just going to be assholes to be assholes.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter.
The amount of free time.
Yes.
Of all movies. Cult of Chucky? Really?
Yeah, that's the one you're going
to
target?
Cult of Chucky?
Yeah.
I know, and it's also like those trolls, you go, God, you know, maybe if society ended, it wouldn't be bad.
Right. Maybe we should
wipe them out. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I don't know.
We should start over. We'll hit the reset button.
We should.
Maybe
start
that's over. How the draft should work.
Yeah.
Oh, like, you know? Oh, you're an internet troll. You just sit around and fucking be an asshole
online.
Yeah.
That's the first line.
Welcome to basic training.
Yeah. You were shipping North 3. Have fun.
And and one last piece of trivia about Chucky is Nika is played by Fiona Dorff, daughter of Brad Dorff, who voices Chucky in every film to date. I mean, we're going on 29 years of Chucky films.
Yeah. And it's interesting about Fiona Dorff is that she looks so much like Brad Dorff.
I know. It's
but
really...
But she's cute.
Yeah.
And it just messes with my head. Like, I don't know how to feel about it.
Yeah. It's cute and off-putting at the same time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. She is really good.
Yeah. She's great.
And there's a good kind of gritty quality to her that kind of centers the whole piece. Keeps you rooted.
Yeah. And one of the things she does, and this is a credit, too, to the... the director is getting the tone right because, well, they've had a fair amount of practice at this point, so you wouldn't think it'd be too off. Is because she acted like she was in a drama, not this, you know, this crazy movie about a doll coming to life and killing everyone. Like she acted like it was real, and and you have to be able to sell it. Like if you have shitty actors in these,
they did really well with kind of rebooting this series. Is that again, they explore. I enjoy Bride of Chucky. I enjoy Seed of Chucky. They're not scary, but they're entertaining.
Right.
They get like jump star cameos. And that's fine, but these play it straight.
Right. Modern movies. It's
If you're a fan,
I need to hear this explanation. Yeah.
If you're a fan of Harry Potter, you're going to watch and enjoy every single one. If you're a fan of Play and Chucky, you're going to just watch and enjoy every single one. These aren't the type of movies that if you're not a fan of one, there's not going to be one in the series that turns you around.
That's true.
Well, I would be what you call case in point.
Yes.
I have never
seen one, never
seen a Chucky, never had a desire to, not excited about it. Saw one Harry Potter movie and was like, oh, God.
Yeah, so
I'm not crazy about the Harry Potter myself, so...
I get the, like, you're either...
I get it, though.
You're
right.
In the franchise or you aren't.
Exactly. Yeah. This is what really
You tell me
is.
If there's a new Fast and Furious coming out, guess who's lining up for
right.
that?
Okay. All right. Hey, you know?
Because you know what you're getting into.
I can't judge anyone who's like, I love the Chucky series. I can be like, oh, how dare you? Vin Diesel is an international spy.
He is a treasure.
He has a gift.
He has a gift, and he can drive better than you or I ever will.
But that's the lovely thing about Chucky is that...
And he can mumble better than either of us does.
Yeah,
he should. For me, he should just stick to Groot.
I believe that's what
he'd rather do.
I think that's his motivation for his Fast and the Furious character is Groot.
Yeah,
I tell you, that's a lot easier production day.
Yeah,
doing Groot.
But Brad Dorff, man, that's a good work day too.
Yeah,
you know, just walking in there doing your crazy lines, and that's the thing too about those Child's Play movies and Chucky movies is how great he is. Like that's the thing that keeps me coming back. He. In any incarnation, is riveting. He's a truly unique take on the evil doll, because half the time the evil dolls wouldn't even speak. Well, there was Talkie Tina in the Twilight Zone.
Oh right.
But
if you look at Brad Dorff, I mean, his career has always been, you know, he's amazing in Cuckoo's Nest. You know, the guy with the speech impediment.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He has a decent role as a Klansman in Mississippi Burning.
He's great in every Deadwood.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah, he was great in Deadwood too.
Yeah. And he's one of those guys like
Deadwood,
Peter Cushing
who hired every B character actor on the planet ended up at Deadwood at some point or another.
Oh man, did I love that show. And I know there was talk that they were going to come around and maybe do a
movie
kind
or
of
something.
A capper movie, but I guess that's off the rails.
Right now it's still talk.
Yeah, still talk. Yeah. We really need to have that cuz God did I love that show. But yeah, Brad Dorff, like Peter Cushing, he's one of those actors who's great in everything he's in. Mm-hmm. The movie may be a little crappy, but he is always rock solid.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's get to a counter-programming film for the...
oh, what do you got?
For the Halloween weekend. Thank you for your service.
Wow. So I... I was interested to see this movie. The trailer looked good.
This is Miles Teller, right?
This is Miles Teller. It's based on an actual book by David Finkel. It's about these group of guys that served together in Iraq. The whole movie is about how they adjust.
Coming back
okay. into society. And the thing that is... and Haley Bennett plays his wife. It's based on this actual guy, Adam Schumann. And so the movie overall is a pretty good movie. There's a couple... goes on a little long at parts. There's one sort of recurring PTSD flashback by one of the guys that just felt... that felt a little... not necessarily real, but what do I know? Maybe this is how this guy actually went, what he went through. And this is the director's like, well, let me try to how do you recreate a flashback in somebody's brain?
Sure.
That was, and so when that happened a couple of times, that was the only time it sort of took me out of it.
Right.
But so much of it is, and they, you know, this movie is about the, you know, you see these guys waiting in long lines at the VA and how they're coping with it. And so Miles Teller was sort of the sergeant. He was in charge of the unit, and it really focuses on these two incidents that are really messing with him and these other guys in the unit. And they all sort of...
combat incidents.
Two specific combat incidents that are just like, oh, God. And, you know, you see Miles Teller, he's always, like, taking care of his guys. And, you know... gives up, finally gets someone at the VA to help them because they're like, oh, there's a 13-week backlog. And you're just like, whoa. And he's like, we need, and this doctor's like, all right, I'll see you right now. He's like, no, you can see my buddy. Like because his buddy's more jammed up than he is. And so there's a lot of stuff like that. And then him not really, you know, how they're all coping with it. Alcohol, acting out, you know what I mean?
Sure.
And all the stuff. And they talk about, you know, there's 22 vets a day commit suicide.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and you're seeing how.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're seeing how this happens. And the you know, Miles Teller does a decent job. He's sort of playing the guy that's always trying to hold it together. Mm-hmm. But the dude that really does an amazing job is, I got to find this actor's name who plays. Yeah. This guy, this actor, Bilua Kowali, and he's in The Last Saint. He's in Faint Fall. He, you know, I think he's either Samoan or Hawaiian or something like that. He is fantastic because he's playing this guy who has traumatic brain injury on top of the PTSD. So he's having memory issues and, you know, just wants to rejoin his unit and they're saying no. And he's having a hard time. And how this actor plays these, and you see part of the culture of the military of the, like, suck it up.
Mm. Right.
You know?
Now, do you see a lot in the film about, like, the actual treatment, like, as they try to get help, or is it more what happens, like, when they're in civilian life?
Well, you see some of that. You see, like, he finally gets a session, the Samoan guy finally gets a session with the therapist, and the question she's asking him, and how he's answering and what he's asking for, and, you know, the medicine they put, you know, a lot of times they're just like, well, here's
take this. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
You see the questionnaire, and there's a pretty powerful scene where, Miles Teller's, there's two really powerful scenes. One, the Solo is the Samoan character's name is Solo. So Solo, the therapist, when she's talking to Solo, says, well, you should have your wife help you with this. He's like, I haven't told her any of this. He's like, you need to tell her. You need to have your wife get involved with this. Mm-hmm. And there's this really cool scene where she's asking him all these questions, because it's like, do you feel suicidal when you know, it's like
questions. The wife is asking.
The wife is asking this, helping him with the questionnaire, because writing and memory is tough for this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And
from the PTSD.
From the PTSD. Mm-hmm. And again, like, also you know, if they're part of an explosion or something, then there's brain injury on top of it. So it's really, I've read some articles. It's really hard for them to sort of figure out
what's happening.
Or is it psychological?
Psychological, right? Yeah.
Right. So it's like they kind of overlap, and where does it start? Where does it end? So you see this guy dealing with that on a day to day basis, and then the VA trying to figure this out. And so, like, there's this one scene where Solo's wife is talking to him, and she's asking him all these questions, and he's like, you know, and it's a powerful scene because you see the, like, you got it, the big sort of point of the film, and I think it's the point of the book, why the guy wrote the book, is you got to talk to people, because the suck it up's fine over there,
yeah.
Because that's your job over there. But when you come back, you can't suck it. You have to deal with this. So Miles Teller's character kind of doesn't. And his wife finds this thing, this survey, and is like, you circled, do you have a hard time feeling like going? I don't want to go on. Somewhat, sort of. And he's like, absolutely.
Right.
And she's like, whoa, you know.
Yeah.
And it's revealed too that he's done, this is like his second or third deployment. And it's this deployment he comes back from where he's kind of different. The other ones he just sort of was like, well, did my job. And, you know, so.
It was the third tour.
And so there's some really powerful scenes. And it kind of shows all of the things that these guys, you know, can get themselves into, and what happens to one of their buddies and another guy that's wounded, you know, like a lot of there's survivor's guilt. There's always the, you know, why did he die? Why did I live and he died? You know,
did it remind you a little bit of the Dry Land, the America Ferrara film that we saw?
Yeah. So the Dry Land, which came out probably what, 5 years ago, six years ago, maybe longer, 2010 or 11.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It sort of was a bigger budget version of that, and it focused on three guys more than just the one, but it showed you how each one is dealing with it or not dealing with it. I'd love to know how accurate it is with the book. I haven't read the book. Cause I'm always wondering, like, certain, when I'm watching a biopic or based on a true story or based on a book, I'm always like, did that happen?
Yeah.
Right. And I'm like, that feels real, but I don't know about that one. And so I always want to know, well, maybe it did and I'm wrong.
Yeah. I will suspend my disbelief or buy into a movie if I feel like the underlying tone of what they're trying to say is on the mark.
Well, yeah. Yeah. And also, like, if, yeah, and how the source material is being treated.
But it's interesting that these type of films, if you go back to even the 70s with Coming Home and Born on the 4th of July, and
Deer Hunter,
right. Yeah, I mean, we need these movies because this is a story that needs to be our culture needs to constantly be reminded
of what's going on.
Of what's going on, and that, like, these are our heroes. These are people who, made these ultimate sacrifices, and they're coming back, and they should be treated the opposite of how they're being treated. They should be
taken care of.
They should have the best medical care, the fastest medical care.
Right, and that's the thing too. There's a scene where Miles Teller finally goes to therapy, and it's him and his wife, and she's like, well, you know, you should apply to some of these centers, these rehab centers, and, you know, we don't know. It might take a week, it might take 6 months, and his wife is like, what the hell are you talking about? She's like, there's hundreds of thousands of people applying. She goes, yeah, but my husband is a combat vet. She goes, there's hundreds of thousands of combat vets with your husband's issue that are dealing with this. And you're just like, yeah, that's what happens when you just are in war for 16 years and, you know.
You generate a lot of veterans.
You generate a lot of veterans.
Yes, yeah.
Seven or eight wars? So it's like you're going to generate a lot of veterans, and then there isn't the resources here at the VA to handle it.
And then the multiple tours, too, that's got, you know, that's a thing that is certainly kind of a newer phenomenon.
Yeah. Mm. Well, there's all the reenlistment bonuses. And when the recession hit, I talked to so many guys that were just like, why are you back here? They're like, oh, there's no work. There's no job back. The factory, the milk, there's no work back in my town. So
got outsourced.
Yeah, got outsourced, globalization. And guess what? The military's paying me 15 or 20 grand to reenlist. All right.
Yeah, isn't there the bonuses if you reenlist?
Of course, there's huge bonuses. Like I had guys go, why are you back there? And said, I'll be straight up with you. The money. Like some guys are like, I don't give a shit about this or why America's here. I just the money.
Right.
And some guys were like, I just want to be with my guys.
Well, that was the other thing I was thinking too, right? That there's that connection that, you know, you want to go back and you want to protect your friends. Well,
two pieces of trivia too on the movie that Amy Schumer donated all the money she earned from this movie to Army War Vet Foundation.
Fantastic.
The thing, I didn't know she was in it, and she has a couple of scenes that you're just like, wow. And I see why they didn't put her in the trailer, because they didn't probably want any confusion.
Right.
Oh, well, what is this?
Yeah, not that.
So when she appears in this, you know, these couple of heavy dramatic scenes, and you're just like, oh wow, that's Amy Schumer, like being for real. Like it was really.
Well, that was smart. I'll bet that was a fight with the producer too. Well, no, we got Amy Schumer in the movie. We got to put her in the trailer.
Yeah, it's like no. Miles Teller is enough to sell tickets to this movie, and
Scott Hayes confined himself to a wheelchair for a solid month in preparation for the role of Michael Adam Emery.
Wow. Yeah, so they're playing real guys, and I think they tried to do that to the best of their ability. There's this, somebody hands at a funeral, a guy's mom hands, he goes, you guys are all, you know, we knew about this and we've been working at it, and he was going to go to this center in California, and it's actually a real place that several of these guys actually went to in real life. And so it was really, you know, it showed a lot of stuff. Like the one guy comes home and his girlfriend or wife or whatever just bails on him. She's like, I can't do this. And, you know, and then the other guy's wives are trying to understand, but they're like, you know, if you're going to be violent or crazy, I can't do this.
Right.
Everyone's like, you got to talk to me. You got to talk to me. So, and, you know, they do some other stuff with PTSD that I found actually pretty accurate. Just like something's happening and then there's a noise going on, and then that sort of
triggers it
and takes him out of where he's at to where his brain goes to that place. And you literally leave the room. Mm-hmm. Your brain takes you somewhere else to where you are not looking at what's around you. Like literally it's like putting on fucking VR goggles.
Right. Yeah.
That takes you to a completely different story and location. And then, you know, someone will tap you on the shoulder and you'll go, oh,
I'm here.
Oh, wow. Shit. Yeah. Okay. I mean, anyone can do that. You know, we can all that's daydreaming. But I think when it's PTSD, it's really you go back and you live that thing.
Yeah.
You re-experience it. So I think it's an important movie. There's some really solid performances in it. Is it going to get a Best Picture? Not. I don't think so. I think it falls a little bit short. You know, I went in, like you said, Matt, I'm glad this movie's being told. This generation needs its Deer Hunters. It needs its Apocalypse Now. It needs its movie. And we've had Hurt Locker. We've had a couple other movies, like smaller ones, Dry Land.
Right, but it wasn't a big movie.
This is a bigger movie. It's getting a lot of marketing. It probably might get some Oscar buzz, which I think is a good thing. I went in with high expectations. I went in wanting, you know,
Oscar buzz.
Deer Hunter.
Yeah.
Where you just walk out just like, oh,
right.
Yeah. Like, holy shit. But Deer Hunter is a masterpiece. It's one of the top movies ever made, in my opinion.
Right.
So I know I set a really high fucking bar.
Whenever you watch Robert De Niro and forget you're watching Robert De Niro, that's a good movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That and King of Comedy.
Right.
But no, it's a good movie, and it shows how Miles Teller is. But this other young actor that plays his buddy is, I was like, wow, where did this kid come from? Because he did some great. All the supporting is really solid, you know?
Okay, yeah.
So even the just like overworked VA people, or just the, you know, the the family members, that you see how much this affects the family. That was the thing that was told to me the first time I went to Afghanistan to do shows. A buddy of mine who was over there that I went to college with, I played lacrosse with him in college, and he was from New York, and he knew three people that died in 9/11. So he immediately joined up and went over there. And he said, that's the toughest thing you don't realize is how hard it is on the families. And you're like, oh man, you saw that. You saw some of the stuff's in the trailer where he comes home and, hey, put chocolate chips in the pancakes. And the wife's like, they don't like chocolate chips. You know, and he's like, oh, right, okay. You know, like you miss birthdays, you right. miss stuff, and the family's trying, but you're not there.
Yeah.
For a year, or maybe you came home a week within that year.
Yeah. And it's war. Yeah. It's not, you didn't go on a business trip.
Right.
Right.
You went to war.
Yeah.
Something that, you
which
know,
you bring home with you.
Yeah. And you think about, you know, the time when you see any, you know, you witness an accident and it, you know, sure. kind of shakes you. And imagine that being your life
for a year.
And, you know, every other aspect of combat. I mean, yeah, to be able to then come home back to this and make that adjustment. God, it's
not
gotta
easy.
No, it's got to be. It's just gargantuan.
It's not. Yeah, it's insane. And I think yeah. it's always been hard, I think, obviously, for any military person to come home to this. But I think in some ways, the thing I noticed was just it's so different. Like it's so different. The Middle East and here, you know, a war-torn Middle East third world country and this life. American life is right. so there's no, I mean, they're so different.
It talking to you, and you were telling me some stories of when you do these tours and just basic things like just the heat, mm-hmm. how walking in there and like walking around and living in like 116 or whatever it is, this just oppressive heat. And you know, that's this just, one this another blanket of psychological oppression on you.
It's all of that.
Yeah,
the heat, the dust, the food, the like everything, you know, like sleeping on a cot, like all of those things,
living amongst people who may not like you too much,
right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, having that every day, and every yeah. day is like,
you gotta rely on these people for your life,
right? Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
then the it's a negative environment there's all these attempts to make it nice and happy and all that stuff. But
ultimately, you know, the job is the job.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's
you're still getting shot at.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, that's your job.
So it's a cool film and it's worth watching. There's really good performances.
I'll check it out.
And it makes some good points about, you know,
well, it sounds good. Even though it didn't quite reach to Oscar status, but it definitely makes me want to see it.
You know, it's interesting when you were talking about this actor that you discovered in this movie, mm-hmm. and I always think about this. I think right now we've gone through a pretty nice wave of low budget or lower budget horror films. There's a lot of stuff, a lot of really great gems that you find on Netflix, and the one thing that gets me. And what annoys me so much when I see a movie or a TV show that has a crappy cast, and you go like, there are lots of really great actors
out
there.
How did this happen?
Right.
Yeah.
You know, you're right. Just like, I know so many amazing actors. How did this happen? And this movie had a $20 million budget. Thank You for the Service was not a...
No, yeah, that's not a lot, you know.
It wasn't Thor.
No.
Right.
No. And
yeah.
they shot most of it in Georgia, mm-hmm. And they shot the Iraq scenes in Morocco. Mm-hmm. But that's not a lot of money, especially
no.
when you have Miles Teller, who's, I'm sure, demanding pretty decent salary now.
Right,
right.
But it was like, it was all about the scenes and the performances. And so exactly, I feel that same way. Like, how could you not, in LA,
there's other
LA
actors
or New
around.
York, you
yeah.
couldn't find one that was better than this?
Yeah. We could reach out to
right.
about, 50 of our friends.
Which,
yes,
you know?
Yes, yes.
Which producer's cousin are you? And we have a Patreon ad. We have Frightfully Uninformed, a podcast that watches mostly classic horror movies to figure out horror movie fandom. FrightfullyUninformed.com, that is at the Patreon $50 tier, and we appreciate Every month you've been doing that for us.
Yeah, and check it out.
I will.
Especially on, it's Halloween.
Sure.
Yeah,
right up my alley.
Frightfully uninformed.
So, and now we had some trailers we wanted to talk about.
All right. No, I don't want to pause.
Is that your pacemaker?
No, my phone is ringing.
Oh, I meant to actually
I think
watch
you're having an episode.
I forgot to watch them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Mudbound.
All right, let's pause the show while we watch Mudbound. All right, so let's talk about Mudbound.
Now, this looks like a little Oscar baity for sure. You've got period piece, war, race.
This one looks
PTSD.
Actually,
yeah. It's put together in a way that, like, I get all these issues that are going on, but it still looks like a great movie.
It does look good.
It doesn't. It looks like, you know, we were just talking about Thank You for Your Service, Coming Home.
Yeah.
So now we're talking about Coming Home from World War II, but we're also talking about it from a black soldier's perspective.
Yes.
And they fought for this country, and then they come back to the Deep South.
Right.
Where it's
probably
like,
not the best place to come back
to.
Yeah,
and, right. they've got to, you know, walk through the back doors of places.
And so it looks interesting. It looks like a real, it looks like a pretty solid film.
Is that Mike from Breaking Bad in it too?
It is Mike.
Yeah, that's Mike.
You're in Mississippi. Yeah.
It looks like a solid cast.
Yep.
Yeah.
Jason Clarke is in it. It does. It looks really good. And it's a Netflix movie, but it's getting a theatrical release. I think what Netflix kind of saw what Amazon was doing a little bit, where Amazon wasn't afraid of the theatrical release in addition to being on Amazon Prime, where Netflix was more like, no. It's only got to be streaming on.
Well, it was Beasts of No Nation, where they just did a qualifying.
Right.
They didn't like put it in theaters for a while.
Right. Exactly.
And I think that's smart. Like, do that. Widen the audience. If you really want people to take you seriously as a feature filmmaking company,
right,
that is trying to get Oscar nominations, I think you got
to
do that.
You need to actually release it in the theaters.
Beasts of No Nation is really
is great. Okay. Good.
I mean, and it was so overlooked.
Okay.
The kid in it should have got a nomination.
All right.
Alone. Like, in addition to Idris Elba. Like, it was a fantastic film. And it was more relevant because it was about, you know, the civil war and the genocide that's happening in African countries today.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So
on my list.
All right. Mudbound.
Mudbound. Check it out when it comes out. But check out the trailer now. So Winchester, the house that ghosts built. I'll tell you, if you told me...
The first 45 seconds were great.
I know, yeah.
The first minute, we were all like, okay.
This might be good and creepy. And look at the cast. This might be really a movie we can take seriously.
Helen Mirren.
Helen Mirren and Jason Clarke.
I'm like, okay, they're really going to add some gravitas to this movie. And then nope.
Oh.
Then you got a bunch of cliche jump scares, and then I'm thinking, if that's what you're picking for the trailer, you can imagine how dumb the rest
how
of the
terrible
movie's
the
be.
Rest of it is. Yeah. You know, because I've always been fascinated by the Winchester Mystery House.
Have you been in it?
Yeah.
So when the first 60 seconds of this trailer, I was like, oh, we're gonna get the story, and they try to get the house from her because she's nuts, and
right.
No, it's just
now it's every other cookie cutter horror film.
Right,
that comes down the pike with every cliche scare. Terrible, like I mean,
the mirror look.
Oh yeah. Check out the trailer. There's a mirror scare that you've seen a billion times before,
and you've seen it a billion times before. Better.
Yes. Yeah. It was clumsy.
It was too long.
Yeah.
It was like.
But and it's such an interesting story too, because what I love about the Winchester Mystery
House. Have you been in it? Have you toured it?
A long time ago.
Yeah.
Because you know, originally from Northern California, so that was kind of like, you know, one of the places you could go.
Here's the craziest thing about the Winchester Mystery House: it has all of this history of and all the ghost stories that belong in it. But so you think to get to it, it's going to be this desolate piece of real estate, and it's not. It's in the middle of a strip mall.
Yeah,
it's like it's in this weird. Like they built like the rest of a city around it. So it's like, well, this is it. Yeah, no, it's right next to the Target.
Yeah. And it is an amazing structure.
Yes.
And the tour is interesting. And although when I look at that place, it looks like the type of house, like if someone said, you have to build a house, That's how it would come out. Like stairs that go to nowhere.
Like the Three Stooges built it.
Exactly,
yeah, that's what it looks like.
Yeah.
So you just hear like Benny Hill music?
Yeah.
Right. Somewhere Curly is trapped in a room that he built himself into.
And one of the one of the legends is that, you know, she would consult mediums.
Yeah, she had a séance room. There's a séance room in the place.
And one of them told her that if you stop building onto your house, you'll die. So that's why there was constant construction on this house. And then there's another
same thing with you, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's why every time you're here, there's a new room.
Yeah, the garage gets a little bigger each time.
I had a medium say, "I just keep surfing, Grant."
Right.
I went this morning, even though it was overcast, I was like, "I gotta do this."
And then there's
naps. That's what I hear. Just a lot of naps.
Take naps.
And then, but it's like there's so much rich mythology in that could have been drawn from for this film.
Yes.
And why was it all ignored? Like the other part was that the house was supposed to be like a maze to confuse the ghosts. Like,
right.
That was the other thing.
Which another thing that I love about the mythology of that place. Ghosts are easily confused.
Yes.
You gotta make. Wait a minute.
Wait
a second. Where am I?
And they can't go through walls. So
staircase goes nowhere.
This is just ridiculous.
I should have dropped breadcrumbs.
Like when they were showing this thing, and then in the trailer where they're like, "Oh, she's the heir to the Winchester throne," and then a guy, and then you hear this. There's a line in the trailer. He's like, "You're trying to steal it from her." He's like, "She's not well." I'm like, "Oh, what an interesting." Show me the actual history of this woman in this house, and this is a lot of money and power involved.
Yes.
And somebody was like, "She's out of her mind. We got to get how did that happen?"
Yep.
Awesome.
Yeah,
we got to go into an Insidious 5 film.
Right.
Right.
Make the story about. Like, first of all, the way that it's shot right off the bat, it's too bright. It's too, it's whatever it is. By 45 seconds into that trailer, I'm already out of it because the mood is wrong.
It gets every beat wrong.
Yes.
It's fascinating.
But then, why not make the film really about her? So you are always questioning whether there are ghosts or not.
Or she's just out of her mind.
Or is she out of her mind? Or is this actually happening?
Yes.
Because
that is an interesting story.
Because it's always like the part of it is too the guilt of the guns. I've profited from all of this death.
Right.
And that's what these ghosts are supposed to be, the spirits of anyone who was ever killed by
a Winchester repeating rifle.
Right. Mm-hmm. So why not go into that? No, we're just going to go into
We're going to take up half the trailer on a mirror gag.
Yeah, and that was the last shot, right?
Yeah. Right. Well, right before that was the peering through the half-cracked open door, and of course, something creepy.
Why not just sit me in a seat in the theater and just every once in a while just clang some pots and pans together,
and then just have a bird suddenly come through the
saved your life.
Just everything's talking quietly, and then just.
Universal Halloween Haunts, they do a lot with a can of beans.
Well, let's talk about
can of
that,
hard beans.
Right?
Absolutely. Halloween Horror Nights at Universal.
You guys went?
I went.
I got the back trouble still.
Yeah, Matt had some back troubles. We went, and what I love about it is that, they take all these different films and you actually get to basically walk through them. But what they do every year is they take a classic film, and this year they did The Shining.
That is so nice.
And it was really cool. So they set up the Overlook Hotel. You walk through, and there's people in Jack Nicholson masks with axes occasionally jumping out and scaring you.
Are they good masks?
And they're decent.
Okay.
They're not like...
They're just 80s road axe pulling
their
hair back.
That's where all those comics went.
Yeah.
I can work again.
And we can put 8 of us in this one maze.
Oh, fantastic.
So, but what I loved about it is they used the technology in a unique way. Where there were a lot of projections, like you got to see the twins and then the hallway and then even the blood coming out of the elevator. Like, all those things were actual visual effects.
Oh, that's great.
That you could actually walk through. And it had the jump scares, but 90% of the jump scares were, you know, somebody with a Jack Nicholson mask with an axe coming at you.
But see, that's where you put the jump scares.
Yeah,
I want
exactly.
the jump scares there.
That's why I'm going.
That's why I'm going there.
Right.
Yes.
And then they had all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. They had that papered, literally an entire room was papered with that, which was really cool. So you had to walk through the actual paper.
And what's scary? What's weird about that?
Yeah.
I don't understand. That's just your
so
writing.
It's perfectly normal. Just, yeah, that's the writing process.
Yeah. That's where I have tea. That's
yeah.
my office. That's my murder nook.
So,
Hashtag murder nook.
And they had Ash versus Evil Dead, which was fun. People were wearing Bruce Campbell masks and they were fighting demons while you were walking
That's
through. And one of them, which was really creepy, was they had a saw maze. And it didn't have a lot of jump scares in it. Like it had, you know, the pig mask heads, they would jump out at you. But what it was like walking through one set piece after another. Like, this is a horrifying torture device that we have actors in, and they're actually like going through this right now, and you just literally walk past them like some one person
I like
is drowning.
That too, though.
One person is getting cut in half. Yeah. And it's what I liked about it too is like not every maze felt like it had to have somebody jump out at you every 4 seconds. Like
no, that gets annoying.
This was and only Universal can do this. This was literally production value. Like, these sets were created to walk through and creep you out. So
nobody
that,
really
good.
I think does it better.
No, they really have a lock on it because they have all the resources.
Because you've been
going
every year for how long now?
Like, probably about 4 years now.
Okay.
Yeah. And
I've been a lot. I've been, I've gone at least 4 times.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always impressive. Every time.
It's really cool. And it's one of those.
Sometimes the movie-based mazes are better than the movie.
Yeah, that happens.
Like,
sometimes.
I remember going to when the Thing prequel came out. They did a maze, and the maze was awesome.
Right.
And I saw the movie, I was like, oh, you should have based this on the maze.
Yeah.
But that's Universal, though. The Transformers ride is amazing.
Yeah,
that is a great ride.
It's one of the best interactive rides I've ever been on.
Mm-hmm. Well, also, the Harry Potter thing, the Harry Potter ride.
Oh, yeah, that's really fun.
Maybe the single best amusement park ride I've ever been on.
Oh, that ride is amazing. I did the one at Disney.
Orlando? Yeah. Me too.
Oh,
it's really
so
fun.
Incredible. Holy shit, that was fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we managed to get there off season, so we went on it like 3 times, just like,
oh, nice.
Let's just live here.
Yeah. So Universal was really fun, and it was, they really take a lot of care and actually meticulous attention to detail.
Yeah.
Like, one of the things they did was a Titans of Terror where it was like Freddy, Jason, and Chucky all together off the tram. And what they did
the
is
splat
they...
splat pack.
Yeah, it was.
I'll work on it.
They set up... the one with Freddy and Jason, they set up...
splat pack.
Where it was like... It started out in like a kid's bedroom with... That was like a fan of like all of the stuff. So it was all this memorabilia that was actually in the bedroom before you actually got into the scares. So they take the extra time to kind of set everything up in a really cool way. So it was definitely worth it again, for sure.
Next year, there'll be like a Harvey Weinstein maze.
Oh, that would be
just
great.
Just like one uncomfortable office to another.
Then you walk into a hotel room and a creepy
robe. Yeah, a lot of robes and
holding a contract for a film.
You want to sign it?
Yeah. A lot of jumping out at you.
Yeah.
That sounds like they can add Kevin Spacey now to this.
Yes. Oh,
every day it's like, oh, another person I used to like that I can't stand now.
I know. But pretty great. Like, you know, it's amazing that, you know, people throw around, you know, watershed moment. But this is a watershed moment.
Oh, you mean it's great in the sense that, like, it's finally, like...
Yeah, all this stuff is coming out. Yeah.
We're talking about this.
Yeah.
And I honestly think we're not done hearing.
Oh, no.
This is the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot more. And
when...
If I were Universal, I'd get out in front of it. Yeah, make a maze.
I mean, look what happened. House of Cards not being renewed.
Right.
Netflix just was like, nope. Mm-hmm. I mean, some movie he's in not being released. It's...
If, you know, who knows what it takes to, you know, make this stuff, at least for the most part, go away. But you hit somebody in their wallet, that's a good start.
Yeah, that is.
That's a real good start.
Yeah.
That's a real good start.
So, all right. So on DVD and Blu-ray, The Dark Tower, if you're a Stephen King fan, you're still not going to like this movie. Terrible. Terrible film.
I wanted to kill myself during the trailer. Like, I couldn't, who is this for?
Yeah, no one. Yeah. No, and it was literally for no one. It wasn't for, like, kids who like Stranger Things. It wasn't for adults. It wasn't for people who read the book. It was literally for no one.
Yeah, and so I guess...
Even Idris Elba fans were like, you know what? I got to go.
I think he's a fantastic actor, but I was just like...
I got to watch Luther again now.
Yeah. right. Yeah.
I'd watch The Wire, again. Right. I would watch so many other things before that.
Yeah, and everyone tells me, too, from Aaron Brungart to other fans, say, look, the books are really good. I don't know what happened with
the movie.
Yeah, I've heard the books are good and that there's a ton of material to draw upon. So you wonder, like, if there's that much material, you have the template in front of you. Like, hey, maybe you should follow the books a little bit more closely.
But I wonder, is that the problem? Because there's so much stuff that they don't know how to distill it. And that's why I had my problems with it. But overall, I did like it because I think that's an unruly piece of material. And the idea of them cutting it up into two halves and at least being able to capture the tone of, you know, the feel of that story and have it be so successful. I wasn't crazy about the miniseries. I thought this was a lot better.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, that's what they need to do. And
I think it's a valid point. I think when you have something that has so much material, man, there's so much room to make a mistake.
Right. But also,
especially by trying to include it all,
right? That's your first mistake.
Yeah,
right. And it really felt like it was like just like little cliff notes of different pieces of like, wait, well, that doesn't really match the other scene. I feel like I just missed 30 minutes. And when we go to this scene to this scene, because you know, ultimately now it's envisioned as like, oh, well, this will be a trilogy. We can make 3 to 5 of these movies, and so they're always looking to the next movie and not concentrating on making this movie good.
Yeah, make the first one good.
Yeah, make the first one good. Then we can talk about the next three. So,
how does that work, too, where I guess now with Wonder Woman in the DC universe, that sort of helped, like, kind of redeem, you know, that franchise. But with the Dark Tower, I mean, if the first one sucks...
You're done. Yeah,
done.
You're done.
And if you've planned two more and you've, you know, got all that, you know, structure of making the next two movies, you know, down the pike, all ready to go, then what do?
You take a right. You take a right off.
Yeah. You try something else.
Yeah. So, and we talked briefly about that at the top of the show. But we wanted to thank All Things Comedy at the ATC Comedy
Festival.
Also,
don't forget Kidnap.
Oh my gosh, I forgot Kidnap. Yes,
Kidnap,
hold
the
on.
Halle Berry vehicle.
Hello.
Halle Berry's taken. See this? It's important.
Is it good?
It's Minivan Taken. It's fantastic.
All right, I'm there.
I went into this movie expecting it to be like so bad it was good. But it's actually just, there's just some good shit in it. It's plausible within this world of her. Because the thing, I'm like, how is this? So she's chasing this guy, the Holt and the cops. And like, it's so, they explain it enough and she plays a great, like, it's believe. It wasn't like, she's ex-Navy SEALs and now a soccer mom. You know, she's a soccer mom who's like, I'm not giving up my kid. And like, it's plausible. Like, this is what a mom would do. I don't know. You got to see it. I want to hear what everybody thinks. It's Halle Berry's take, and I'm all
for it. I'm a sucker for those type of movies anyway.
If you're going, I only have enough money for one DVD this weekend.
Okay.
Go kidnap.
Yeah. All right.
Dark Tower will make you mad.
Yeah, it really will.
Oh, God, no.
Especially if you're a fan of everything that's in the Dark Tower. Fantasy, Idris Elba, monsters.
If you're just a fan
Kids
of
in
like,
peril,
an interesting story.
Stephen King, yeah.
you don't have to be a fan of things that are good.
Yeah.
This might not.
Yeah, it'll make you angry.
If you want something that will ruin everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Check out
Dark
Tower.
Film.
This is.
So.
While Kidnap will reinstate your.
Level. I'm there.
Yeah.
I'm excited now. Yeah.
See ya.
And so we want to thank everybody at All Things Comedy. We had a blast at the All Things Comedy Festival. We had some people show up to the pop-up studio which was really cool. So
the pop-ups were, they live video streamed it, but we also do have the audio. We'll release it this week as just some bonus content. So it was really fun. We had a great interview with Mike Young, who's a filmmaker that I actually went to college with. Mm-hmm. So you can hear us talking about being shifty little hustlers in college.
Yeah. Yes, good.
It was really well run. You know, all the shows were fun. They really took care of the comics. We got free food and drinks all weekend. You know, like, it was really, you know, we've all been to festivals or comedy clubs where they're just like, oh, the comics. You know, it's just
right.
Like,
oh, yeah, right.
Oh, I'm sorry. We're the cornerstone of your business. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Wow, yeah. I'm sorry that the nachos are more important than I am.
Yeah, I know. I always want to sit those guys on. They're not coming for your chicken strips, man.
Yeah.
They're coming for the comedy on stage.
Yeah. I always like the condo, which I guess the day you do more of the road stuff. Most often now it's a hotel room, right?
The condo thing has definitely been phased out. There's a couple clubs that still do it, but clubs are really realizing
that no one likes them.
Well, no one likes them, but also, like, the clubs. I was talking to a club owner that was still doing it, and I was just like, "Do you want this headache? Like, do you want the?" He's like, "Well, I got a thing, and if a comic," I go, "Wouldn't you? If I was a comedy club owner, I'd be like, get a hotel, get a decent hotel for the comic, because I believe where you put someone up, you're telling them what you think about them."
Oh, yeah.
You know, right. so you, like, we were in a really nice hotel, and it had, you know.
And it was right by the venue,
It was
too.
A block from the venue. They had this nice shuttle bus. So some of the shows were at the Tempe Improv, which is about 15 minutes away. So a nice shuttle bus that was well organized and well run. Like, everything was smooth, and it was.
And I would think that you staying at a good place also puts you in a better place for the show, to do the show.
For sure.
You're happy. You're in a good mood. You're going to do a better show.
What other business does this? What other business, if I'm running a business and you're coming to talk at my business for my conference or whatever, you're an IT guy and you're going to give an IT talk at my company, I'm going to put you up in a shitbag hotel or a bad condo.
Right.
There are times
I
wish for
with you, I'll stay in a nicer one and give you the shitty one.
No, there are times where I wished for the shitbag hotel. Like, at least I get clean towels every day.
There's a club I used to work that still had an awful condo. And I remember one time I just went, no. And I stayed in like a Motel 6 or a Comfort Inn and was happier because I was like, at least it's a hotel. It's a room. There's clean.
It's your own space.
It's my own space. There's not weird stains on stuff.
Well, that was the thing that always got me is it wasn't
clean.
You have never shampooed this carpet since the building opened in the 20s.
and the carpet is haunted.
Yeah.
With
the Winchester mystery shag rug.
But I'm always like, if I owned a business, first I would want to put you up in a nice place, but also, because I think it's the clubs that are still, they've been around a long time and they're
stuck in the old ways.
The old ways, oh, this is what we did, or, you know, they had this, well, the comics ruined it. And it's like the 80s John Fox party, those days are over. And also, the thing that always drove me nuts about those clubs, well, they'd say, we used to put you in a nice place, but the comics ruined it. I said, no, that comic ruined it.
Right. Yeah.
Don't
yes.
fucking book that asshole back right. there yeah. anymore.
It's like when you don't get free food at the club, like a week later, and like, oh, well, who was here before and just ruined that?
Oh, the comic ruined it. No, the comic didn't ruin it. Do I apply that to the club owner? Hey, I need to be paid in cash. Why? Because the club owners bounced a check to me.
Right.
So it's such bullshit. Anyway, ATC did a fantastic job.
I love them just from your story.
Because it's run by two comedians.
Right.
If Al Madrigal and Bill Burr put us in shitty places and whatever else, every comic would go, hey, what the fuck?
Sure.
Yeah,
sure.
What's
How
wrong
long have
with
you been
guys.
On the road?
Yeah.
So it was really
It was
cool.
a great experience.
It was so much fun. And I laughed all weekend. It's because we don't all get to hang out, comics, because we're all traveling or whatever. So it's like summer camp. We're just laughing our asses off. You're running into all these comics. We just giggled. That's all we did was giggle all weekend.
Sounds
yeah,
good.
It was fun.
It's good business.
So premiering this week, Thor Ragnarok kind of crept up on us this movie.
What?
Yeah, I
Holy
know.
Shit.
Wow. Yeah, Thor is coming
Very
out
excited.
This weekend.
Then we got to do a spoiler next week.
Well, yeah, we'll have to do a spoiler for sure.
All right, we got to
Based on, I guess, some of the source material of that movie is
Planet Hulk.
Planet Hulk, which is one of my favorite comics of like all time. Like, I love that story.
And it's whereas Hulk actually goes to another planet and becomes a gladiator.
I'm in. The trailer, I saw one trailer and I was like, done.
Yeah.
I don't need to see any. That's the thing about some of these movies. I just show me the teaser.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I saw the teaser 9 months ago or whatever and went, I'm in. Yeah. I don't need to see one frame more.
Doctor Strange is in it. Yes. You know, it'll be a fun movie.
Goldblum.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, that's right. Jeff Goldblum is in it, too.
Oh, always love him.
So, and actually, some good counter programming: A Bad Mom's Christmas.
Brilliant.
So, although a little early. I mean, we did just start November, but I think both films will do well this weekend.
Yeah, it's smart. Mm. Bad Moms was fun. I saw it the first time. The first one. This one looks funny. I mean, I don't know.
I'll take your word for it.
Let's do it.
Yeah. All right. That is our show.
Ladies and gentlemen, how about it? That was episode 393.
Hey, can I plug something?
Of course. I was just about to give you a plug. Matt Weinhold, what do you have going on that people need to learn about?
You want to plug your back surgeon?
The Disc Surgery Center.
Okay.
Dr. Sanjay Khurana did an excellent job. The nurses, fantastic. And the food? Because you were getting the surgery done at the clinic. You don't have, like, the hospital food. They went out to Jerry's. Fantastic.
So,
get your back done there. And I have this podcast called Monster Party with my friends Larry Stroth, Sean Sheridan, and James Gonis. And you can find us at on Facebook, Monster Party TV, Instagram, Monster Party HQ, and Twitter at Monster Party HQ. And you can get my CD, I believe, at comedyfilmnerds.com.
You can indeed. We have some left.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so get that.
Dead funny.
Dead funny. Check it out. And also, if I could just plug this, tomorrow, Wednesday the 1st, 10 p.m. on IFC, Stand Against Evil, Season 2.
Ooh.
I did some writing on it and had a lovely time. And I can't wait for the season. A lot of great cameos. One of my personal heroes, Jeffrey Combs, is in an episode.
Janet Varney's in this.
Janet Varney. I love her. She's great. Yep. Everybody's great. And so check out this new season. I think you will be pleased.
Awesome.
Very cool.
Janet Varney is also in an episode of Conversations from the Abyss.
She is indeed, called The New House. Mm-hmm. And that is available right now at Conversations from the Abyss on iTunes.
I think that's what have I got going on this Tuesday? I'm doing a stand-up comedy show at the Virgil this Tuesday, which is the date on this Tuesday is November 2nd. It's a show that Brian Cook runs. Brian Cook was in the Podfest, so that's this Thursday, November 2nd at the Virgil in Hollywood. That's a 7:30 show. And what else, pal? What else we got going on?
Well, we want to announce that Earbuds is now back on the Comedy Film Nerds website. So you could get the downloads, you could get the extras, and you could get the signed DVDs. Not too early to start shopping for Christmas.
Get your Christmas shopping out of the way.
But,
One stop.
But all Earbuds material is now back available on the Comedy Film Nerds site.
Outstanding.
Sweet.
And the other new item we have is... Dana Gould's vinyl LP, I Know It's Wrong, is now also available. Signed LPs of
nice. And of course, Earbuds, you can still get it on iTunes and all the Amazon and all the other stuff. Afghanistan is available on Amazon, too, in Comedy Dynamics section on Amazon Prime. So you can watch that. I got some people tweeting about watching Afghanistan.
Oh, cool.
What else? Anything else?
That's it.
Anything else, just come over.
Just come. Stop by. We got
get
candy.
Some candy.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Take some candy.
Yeah. I always got a pan of chili cooking.
Yeah.
Get some Monster Party chili, folks. We're going to be selling that on the website pretty soon. But thank you so much, Matt Weinhold, for being on the show.
Thank you.
Always great to have you. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember,
Han shot first.
Winchester Ghost House.
Ugh.